following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
SEC Media Day ballots have been returned, and people still not loving the Auburn Tigers. It's Monday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Happy Monday, everybody. Oh, man. Can we start that music over? You got me at the wrong time. Oh, man. It is Monday, July 27th. Welcome in. It's the Monday edition of On the Line. I'm Christian Griffin here with you on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I don't know if it's official, and it may just be the fact that I have spent a lot more time outside than I usually do, and I guess that sounds bad in itself, but I don't know if there's anything worse than the moving process. And gosh, this morning was after the rain. It was just absolutely gross outside. It says it's only 87 degrees in the Unnamed Weather app. I feel like you could double that, and I would probably agree with you. But happy to be inside, happy to take a break from the moving process, because, again, I don't think that there's anything worse than that. And that's where a lot of people sit right now. That's where both of the people you hear today, that's where they sit here this afternoon. But very excited to be back in the studio, back here on the plains. Again, our Friday show was back inside the studio, and man, had a really, really fun show. A lot of engagement, both from the text box, also from the phone lines. Hoping that will be the case here again today, because a lot to dive into on the football side of things, on the basketball side of things. Maybe from the fairways to the greens as well.
Something
should
like
be
that.
A very, very fun show here. We appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. I'm Christian Griffin. Across from me is my man, Trip Upton. Happy Monday, sir. I know you're also in the moving process, so I know your feelings are shared with mine that I don't think that there's anything more grueling than that.
Yes, happy Monday. Again, it doesn't feel like a Monday. You could have told me it was Wednesday, and I'd probably believe you. I don't know why.
I told people all weekend multiple times that you could tell me it was whatever day of the week that it was, or you could just pick a random day, and I'd believe you.
Yeah.
Because Tampa, obviously, it was like, okay, we knew what was going on each day, but it was very much, it wasn't like, all right, it's Monday, all right, it's Tuesday, it's Wednesday, it's Thursday, and then driving back, doing a show that Friday, which I did, in fact, go back to bed after doing the show.
Smart man.
Because should have been the joke. I should have just played that as our intro, the fact that I said the wrong day three times in a row, hinting at today, where we are diving into a lot of the SEC Media Day ballots.
Yes.
So
yeah, moving is just terrible. But one thing that, like, I get it. And if you're I don't want to say a middle-aged suburban dad, I don't want to say that and bookmark this, because I think this is for everybody. I had to get a storage unit for a lot of my stuff right now, because I'm kind of in between apartments, kind of bouncing around between an unnamed rental service and then a temporary place. But so I got one of a storage unit, dude. I don't know why. The pride that I have of, I gotta go run by the unit, man. Like, I got the keys on my keychain. Like, if anyone else out there, please text in 334-784-1685 or call in if you want to. I don't know if you want to talk storage sheds on the line, but hey, you never know, on 334-321-1390. But I just, the idea that, like, I can just go walk into a building and just unlock just a shed and it's my stuff in there. I don't know why. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I've never had that, but, like, I get, like, why dads, or why, you know, like, the stereotypical dad has, like, a workshop or a shed in the backyard. It's like the Saturday Night Live's like, get off the shed. If anyone knows what I'm talking about, please don't make me sound like a crazy person, but it's pretty cool. But yeah, moving stakes, talking sports, and looking at what's going on in the SEC in Auburn is pretty fire.
That's a pretty, yeah, pretty solid. Moving sucks. Auburn news is cool. Jackson Coivin's awesome. I think that's a pretty solid
Jim
way
Nance
of going
Jim Nance said
about.
War Eagle. Like, come on.
And if that didn't cure every single part of any sort of Auburn depression there is, the laugh before,
yeah,
cured everything in me. Felt like a little kid
literally
hearing that again. But that should be on the hotkey. That's what we need to put on there is Jim Nance saying War Eagle just to make us giddy and
give us chills,
give us to feel something again. But man, we are excited to be back in the studio, excited for a really fun show today. Trip mentioned it, the phone lines are wide open for the first hour and a half of today's program. Before we get to our good buddy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, as we do every single Monday at 3:30, you can join in and be a part of the show at 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind here this afternoon, whether that's media day ballot stuff that we're talking about, we're going to dive into a little bit more of the basketball conversation because we now know the days, or at least a majority of the days. We know the weekends versus the midweek games for the Auburn Tigers. Some of them are like the third or the fourth of either that Tuesday night or Wednesday night, but we know now the order in which these games are being played. We're going to dive into a lot of that in hour number two, and so again, any football conversations in hour number one, we definitely want you to be a part of it. Or any quick hitters, any questions that you have for us in the text box, any comments, any jokes, anything you have for us on this Monday afternoon. The text box is always wide open at 334-784-1OTL, 334-784-1685. We appreciate everybody again for being here with us, and especially for last week again. Yes, last week was such a unique and awesome experience. I know that this was, again, we talked a lot about it, your first time at SEC Media Days. It was my second, but the transition that we had from it being now our show and the first time me, quote-unquote, hosting SEC Media Days. It was a very, very unique, very cool experience that I know that we have talked a lot about off-air and on-air as well. But, again, a big-time thank you for everybody that was a part of last week for making it happen, not only last week, but a big thank you to everybody that is a part of our show every single day, every single week, whether that's from 2 to 4, whether that's from 2:25 to 2:40 when you're in your truck driving home or driving wherever you need to go. We appreciate everybody, man, for being a part of this radio station, for being a part of our show. We know that everything is going to continue to grow, and I don't say that just because of the work that we do, and we feel like it's relevant. We feel like it's halfway comical. And again, you take that younger side of opinions, right? But you still keep that old school, quote unquote, mentality. And I think that's a healthy medium between the two that we bring. But also with football season continuing to draw closer, we know that more and more people are going to be engaged. More and more people are going to be listening in every single week. And so we are very, very grateful to be able to do what we do and to be able to have awesome, amazing experiences like we did last week down in Tampa, Florida. And with that came our SEC Media Day ballots. And I know that The Drive was able to talk a little bit about this on Friday, because I think we got this at like 2:15 on Friday. So we were already kind of in the middle. I guess we had already done the introduction, kind of off and running with our show. And we wanted to be able to save a little bit more time for this today rather than Friday. Again, we wanted that to be that giant media day recap. And I think based off how the text and off the phone lines went, I'd say it was a pretty successful day. But today, again, a lot of this going to be the media day polls. The media day ballots were every single person that was there for the media got the same questions, and you had to fill it out, and it went from the SEC champion, it went from the projected order to finish in the SEC, and then you got your first, second, third team, offense, defense, you voted on every single position, and so we now have all of that, and it really is interesting seeing to dive everything, or to diving into all of this, and so we'll be able to look at this, kind of compare what we had individually with this as well, and so, again, really excited to dive into this. I've looked at it a little bit, but not to the extreme, because I wanted to react to a lot of this on air, to be completely honest with you. And I can't say that I am overly surprised when looking at the SEC champion based off the votings, but the projected order of finish looks very different than what I have. I don't know if you can say the same thing, but I know we'll dive into a little bit of this as we go along. But again, all of this to say a big time thank you to everybody that was able to make everything happen last week for us to be able to dive into a lot of this and continue to talk about how, although people, I think, in the media, after seeing Byron Brown, after seeing and hearing Alex Golish and those three gentlemen, I think people took Auburn a lot more serious. It was very, we used the word refreshing all last week, not only in terms of the four guys that represented Auburn, but also the media and how they handled themselves outside of the South Florida media. But it felt very refreshing. It felt like you were able to really dissect a football team, which is exactly what media days should be. Yet that being said, when you look at this, things may not have changed too much from what it said and what people predicted a couple of weeks ago.
We said it last week, just the idea that we were able to hear football questions was so refreshing. You know, I don't know if this is my first media days, but I always will watch the coach's statement, the press conference, sometimes, you know, the electronic media, and be able to hear just the questions. And it was not the golf questions. It was not the social change questions. It was about the team and about what the building wants to be over the near future.
I think it's, again, the ability that the biggest thing for Auburn walking out of SEC Media Days was, cool, we got to talk about the offensive line. We got to answer questions about Byron Brown. We got to talk a lot about the defense and DJ Durkin. And then we kind of left. And Alex McPherson obviously there as well talking about the special teams. And I know he had one of the more underrated quotes that I think Auburn people have begun seeing a little bit of. But it was talking about making 60-yarders in practice. And he said, yeah, us as a unit made like 3 60-yard field goals. And just to be able to say the units, right? He talking about the guys, talking about everything. That was the perfect example of why he was such a good story, such an embodiment of the Auburn Tigers. Because it's one thing to say, yeah, with not quite the T, but you know, whatever holds up the solo field goals where you just basically rest it on the stake and then kick it out, like, yeah, that's one thing. But to be able to say you're sitting there kicking them in practice with a snapper, with a holder, and then you have Alex McPherson draining them through the uprights, I think that was a very a perfect way of going about it for Alex Golish, bringing one guy from each side of the football and a special teams unit as well. That being said, I don't think that it's overly surprising that the two names that dominated the SEC champion predictions was Georgia and Texas. Georgia came in and finished with 88 votes received from the SEC Media Day to win the SEC. Texas with 57, and then a 51-vote drop-off with Ole Miss at 6, A&M with 5, Alabama with 3, Oklahoma with 2, LSU also with 2, which we'll get to that here in just a moment, and Kentucky. Big Blue Nation, shout out Lance Daw, who was not there, so he did not vote for that, but Vanderbilt was no longer represented, so maybe that vote was transferred over into Kentucky.
I hope it was basically his equivalent at Vanderbilt that did it, as a thank you.
Yeah.
We're riding with you if you're riding with us. I that's what I hope. But, you know, I'm very curious your opinion, Christian. Kind of, I know you being off air and talking about kind of how our ballot process went. Of, are you surprised that there really wasn't a true third place team compared to Georgia and Texas?
Very much so. I think it's when you look at the SEC this year, and I think this dives into my comments that I made off air again when the first time I was truly looking at this. The fact that there's nobody that's really bought in to LSU, and I understand that the schedule is very difficult, and I understand that it's Lane Kiffin, but at the same time, when you're looking at it pound for pound, you could even say that in a British way of talking money for money.
Sure.
Because of what LSU was able to do with the transfer portal and the amount of dollars that they threw at everybody. It's one of, if not the most talented roster, not only in the SEC, but in college football. Obviously, there's some question marks, and Sam Levitt probably being the biggest question mark, and didn't really get a lot of those question marks answered at Media Days because Sam Levitt did not travel with Lane Kiffin to Tampa. But I am. I'm very surprised that I'm surprised that Ole Miss was that third team. I'm also very surprised that there was not kind of somebody else in there. You'd expect LSU or somebody to almost be in that like 25 vote range, right, to where it's like, okay, this is respectable. They're still very much in third place. But again, 88 votes received for Georgia, 57 votes received for Texas, and then Ole Miss with 6.
Yeah, I definitely, looking at LSU, I pulled up their schedule, and we can kind of look at it basing on the how they expect to get to Atlanta. You got to go week 3 to Ole Miss. I don't care if Ole Miss is dramatically worse than LSU on a talent standpoint, which I think in a lot of positions they are. Ole Miss has the quarterback advantage, the running back advantage, and
at least from proven in the SEC.
Proven in the SEC, correct. And they're going to be at home with probably what's going to be the environment of the year in college football. I'm not high on Vaught-Hemingway Stadium, but they're going to do that. They got to play Texas A&M, another contender early. You don't start talking. You could be looking into October 10th, and LSU has not picked up an SEC victory.
Wow.
Just how the schedule breaks down on top of Alabama and Texas, and then on the road in Knoxville. I think that's has a lot to do with the, not disrespect, but the lack of respect for LSU.
Yeah. So, and how much of that is Lane Kiffin, right? I feel like that plays a very big factor.
I mean, I don't think the media loves Kirby Smart, but he is far and away, and Steve Sarkisian is not the most media beloved person either.
I guess more so just from a trust perspective. Not obviously sure. Personalities aside, because you hope that there's enough legitimate professionalism in the media to not go, yeah, well, I don't like Kirby Smart as a person, so because of that, I'm not going to vote for him.
You'd be surprised with some people in the media.
Very much
but,
so.
But I think that the idea that, yeah, Lane Kiffin has not been to Atlanta. However, I would also make the point that looking at the teams that have been to Atlanta since Lane was at LSU, they would have dramatically more resources than Lane did at Ole Miss. I think LSU is going to be able to give him the war chest, and they have are trying to this year to get him to Atlanta. I just think the schedule, along with the up and down, we really don't know what Sam Levitt's going to look like healthy. That's going to be a big concern.
Who did you take? Did you take one of these two? You're not the one Kentucky voter, are you?
No, I am not the one Kentucky voter. I didn't want to make noise my first ballot. I picked the Georgia Bulldogs.
Okay.
And we'll get into this once we get more into our deep dives, but I think Georgia, from a roster standpoint, I think they're the best defense in the SEC. I'm really high on Ellis Robinson IV. I'm really high on KJ Bolden. I know a lot of people are kind of up and down on him. Elijah Walker on the defensive line is fantastic. They're going to have a good defense.
Yeah. Which is expected. Kirby Smart and Glenn Schumann.
Correct. I know it'll hurt with them losing Muschamp. But I think with the offense, Gunner, year 3 in the system. Yeah, if you want to count that playoff run, the 1 or 2 games he played as year 1. Mm-hmm. But second full year as a starter, one of the few in the SEC to do that. Nate Frazier in this running back room is a solid group. I mean, they ranked him as a top 10 RB unit we've talked about. And the O-line is the O-line. Drew Bobo, a senior. I think Georgia can outduel Texas's offensive weapon. So I have Texas. I have them as my number 2. I'd be very curious to hear if you had either of these teams. Did you have both of these teams as well?
I'm the exact opposite.
So you have Texas.
I have Texas.
Okay, so then
Georgia.
I'll let you talk about Texas, why you like them.
I think it's got to be the year for Sark. And I think when you look at everything, you look at Arch Manning, who played really, really well at the back half of the season, kind of once the Heisman eyes went away from him after the early season struggles. I think he got a lot more comfortable in the offense. They found out that running the football can be a part of your offense, which they did not do when Quinn Ewers was there, because it was like, all right, let's go look at Quinn Ewers' stat line. Holy cow, he was 32 of 54. Like, Arch Manning doesn't need anything like that. And I think that is why you saw this Texas team go out and get 2 really, really good running backs to make it to where, okay, you put guys in the backfield with a really, really good offensive line. That's going to make our job for Arch Manning that much easier. That makes things that much easier for Cam Coleman. That makes things that much easier for Ryan Wingo, because as soon as those safeties start getting on their toes rather than their heels, that's when you beat them over the top. I think that this is a very complete offense. I think when you look at what they want to do. Obviously, there is more trust than there is the actually going out and executing it. But I do. I think that – I think right now in my votes, I had Texas beating Georgia in the SEC championship. Again, those are the two high and above teams over just about everybody in terms of the votes received to be the SEC champion. Georgia with 88, Texas with 57, and then a 51-vote drop-off with the third-place team at Ole Miss, where they had 6 votes. That being said – you look at the projected order of finishing.
Yeah, I was about to say, there is a third team there.
There is a third team, and right behind that, there's a fourth team, and right behind that, there's a fifth team, right behind that, there's a sixth team, behind that, there's a seventh team, and then there's the drop-off. So although there's two heavy favorites to make the SEC title game, there's a lot of people that have a pretty solid feel about what the top half of the league is going to look like.
Yeah, looking at it, I'm surprised because, you know, we can talk about this more. I know we have to get to break here in a moment, but that 7th place team, I had them a little bit higher. I was a little surprised on that. But I do think those are the 7. Those are the 7 teams coming into the season that are going to compete for the college football playoff, in my opinion.
On air math right here, doing it live. 53 votes for the predicted order to finish sit between the 4th place team and the 7th place team in the SEC. And so again, while there are two overwhelming favorites to make their way to Atlanta, I think they're still projecting the top half of the SEC to be really, really dang good. And Auburn, not in that spot, but they did jump a spot from where they were looked at earlier. We'll get to that. We'll also talk about the team preseason All-SEC. Auburn has a couple of names represented in there as well. Before we dive into some win-loss totals or the projected totals, and if we're buying, if we're selling any of these teams' win totals post-SEC Media Days, we're just off and running here on the Monday edition of On the Line. We're back right after this.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. He entered the room the same way every day. A sweater, a pair of sneakers, a gentle smile. Fred Rogers believed television could teach kindness. Not through loud voices, but quiet ones. For more than 30 years, he reminded children they were valued, that feelings mattered. And perhaps his greatest lesson was the simplest. You have made this day a special day just by being you. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
All right, we're back here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate you for spending some time here with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Diving into our SEC preseason media day, kind of the ballot that everybody had. And we hadn't talked too much about our individual ones because I hadn't really asked you about it whatsoever. But turns out we both do have the overwhelming favorites to make their way to Atlanta. Again, Georgia with 88 votes received to be the SEC champion. Texas behind them with 57. And then a big-time 51-vote drop-off for Ole Miss, who had 6 votes to be the SEC champion. Trip picked Georgia. I, funny enough, picked Texas to beat, respectively, the other team right there. But, again, with that, Georgia finished with 2,519 points. So essentially, if you for the ballot people, the way that these points work their way to get these weird numbers is if you pick them to finish first, they'd get 16 points. You predicted them to finish second, they'd get 15 points.
I didn't know that. I did not know that, actually. So so the person that finished last in your poll will get 1.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I believe
that makes sense.
Because, again, spoiler alert, Arkansas is projected to finish last with 262 votes. So,
yeah, I can't pretend I'm surprised about that.
Can't say that I am either. But Georgia at first, Texas only about 60 votes behind them in terms of predicted order to finish.
70 exactly.
Darn.
No, I'm not correcting your math. I'm saying like, that was you ballparked it just by looking at it
for
a split second, which is good.
But there we go. 70 exactly. And then Ole Miss is kind of right there. Again, they are 445. I can do that math right there.
There
445.
We go. 2004.
Quote, points behind Texas. So they're projected to finish third in the SEC. And then we talked about fourth through seventh. That is Texas A&M. That is LSU. That is Alabama. And that is Oklahoma, respectively, in that order. And so the predicted order of finish, Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, LSU, Alabama, Oklahoma. Saying that, I would be very surprised if five teams were from the SEC were to make their way into the 12-team tournament, the 12-team college football playoff. Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Texas A&M to represent the SEC. LSU misses out on the playoff entirely. Alabama misses the playoff. Oklahoma misses the playoff. You'd have some pretty fired up people throughout those individual locations if this were to work its way into fruition the way that the media does, or the way the media predicted. I will say they did give us some information. Only 10 times since 1992, which has been 34 years of SEC Media Days, has the predicted champion prior to SEC Media Days proceeded then to go and win the SEC championship game. So, that being said, Georgia, the overwhelming favorite to win the SEC, only happens about 30% of the time.
A chance. There's a chance, yeah.
That is so wild to think about, that it's only, again, 10 of the 34 times they've predicted it correctly. With how dominant the Alabama dynasty, right? I mean, the amount of insane teams,
yeah.
The fact that...
And I bet you, honestly, the number was boosted from like 2009.
Oh, yeah, you just throw Alabama at the top and
yeah,
you're
Alabama,
right 75% of the time.
Legitimately, I'd be very curious to look at that and see what the success rate was before and afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, you had your Auburns 1 year and a Georgia 1 year, but in between that, it was Alabama dominance.
Yeah.
Hate to say it, but it's true.
It's how the college football world worked, which is why NIL is a good thing, also has its bads, but that's a story for another day. We'll continue diving into the predicted order of finish. Where does Auburn sit, as well as the teams that they play, and then the offense, defense, and special teams, all SEC teams when we come back.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin. He is Trip Upton, continuing to break down the SEC Media Day ballots, the final ones where all of the media went and voted on the projected order of finish, the SEC champion, I guess, indirectly voting on the SEC runner-up, to where, again, very much the majority, the outspoken SEC championship game is Georgia defeating Texas in Atlanta. But as we teased going to break, there were some stats given to us by the SEC that only 10 times since 1992, so 34 years, 10 of the 34 times has the SEC media basically been correct after SEC Media Days of who was going to win the SEC championship game, which sounds wild to me. I think that that also just goes to show them a stat like this, that like, okay, you want to see how good the SEC has been as a whole, as a conference from top to bottom, and how that is the big argument now of SEC versus Big Ten versus Big 12 versus ACC, whatever the case may be, of you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He had half the teams in the SEC basically get votes, at least one, to win the SEC championship. Whether some of those were taken seriously or not, that's a story for another day. But again, the fact that Oklahoma is at 2, LSU was at 2, goes to show you how this is anything but a top-heavy league. And I think that is what the SEC will continue to to look at, and that will be kind of what they hold above just about everybody else in terms of the overall conference. Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, LSU, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Tennessee, the top half of the SEC in that order. Again, Georgia the overwhelming favorite, Texas behind them, a little bit of a drop-off with Ole Miss, then Texas A&M. But again, A&M, LSU, Alabama, Oklahoma, 4 through 7, you could almost interchange about where you wanted to according to the points with the predicted order of finish. You then have Florida at number 9, who's not too far off from there. Missouri, who's about another 100 drop off from there to finish 10th. South Carolina, projected to finish 11th. Would that keep Shane Beamer's job?
I think that what Shane Beamer has to do is get to a bowl game, and I don't think he can lose that bowl game. I don't think he'd be 6-6.
I was going to say, I don't even think that it could be just, bowl game.
Yeah, like, he can't go to Birmingham. He can't go, although Tampa is nice for media days, you can't go to the Gasparilla Bowl.
Right. Go to the Pinstripes Bowl or something.
Sure. I don't think the SEC is in the Pinstripe Bowl. I forget which they are. I could do it.
But just one of the 9 a.m. bowl games,
yes,
that you wake up and it's like, holy cow, it's already halfway through the third.
Like, it's like how the I remember whatever bowl game Kennesaw State played in. Hootie, yeah, they were down 35-0, and you could still get Chick-fil-A breakfast in certain parts of it was pretty impressive.
I don't remember that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but I think that the Beamer needs to. The only way 6-6 works, and maybe even 7-5, I don't know, but 6-6, you got to pick off someone not named Clemson. You got to go beat Alabama. You got to go beat Oklahoma. I think they might play Oklahoma. You got to beat one of those teams, and not just beat, you know, when you're out of conference, beat Kentucky, Mississippi State, and then upset Clemson. Like, you got to go beat a powerhouse in the SEC, which they've been close to doing, but not close enough.
All right, rapid fire, looking at the South Carolina football schedule.
Yeah.
Don't think about it. I'm going to read you the schedule. We're going to see how many wins they can get. To start off the year, shout out to the boy. Shout out to Mr. Goins, Mr. Jacob Goins, who just landed in Chicago, by the way, for Big Ten media days. But
yeah,
that's not worth mentioning.
Going to SEC media days for so many years.
We're
going
to bring in an expert from Big Ten media days and talk to you about it. His name is
Jake Stoppins.
His name? No, I can't. I almost replaced the letter. No, that would sound very bad. But he made his joke about Kent State, and it's can't read, can't write, Kent State. So South Carolina starts with Kent State. So
I think they win that one.
I would say they win that. Towson.
Win. Shout out Tigers.
Mississippi State at home.
If it was
rapid fire. Mississippi State at home.
I'm going to go win.
To Alabama.
Loss.
Hosting Kentucky.
Win.
Going to the Swamp.
Loss.
Hosting Tennessee.
Loss.
Going to Norman.
Loss.
Hosting A&M.
Loss.
Going to Arkansas.
Loss.
Hosting Georgia.
Loss.
Going to Clemson.
Loss.
Oh, man.
I think I have 4.
That is 4 wins projected. Again, we will do our official ones here.
I mean, because
once
you told me rapid fire.
I did very much. Again, this is not official.
They could beat Tennessee.
They very much could. But again, that right there would put South Carolina just at the rapid fire of 4-8 with wins over Kent State, Towson, Mississippi State, where you'd start 3-0.
And then go 1-9.
And go 1-8.
1-8.
You'd basically start 4-1 with a loss in Tuscaloosa before going back home to beat Kentucky.
You'd be a top 20 team.
you'd be the 22nd ranked team going to the Swamp.
And people are like, Beamer's back, the Kendall Briles offense, and then next thing you know, you're sitting there watching Flight Tracker trying to see, like, oh man, is this flight, where is it going? Is that going to Stillwater, Oklahoma? Are we getting Eric Morris? Like, that's what the South Carolina fan experience could be like. But again, we'll talk more about that. But
we very much will. But again,
South Carolina 11.
South Carolina projected to finish 11th in the SEC. And there's the Auburn Tigers right after them, projected to finish 12th. They got 936 votes, which put four teams in front of them. And I think most of these stayed put from where the preseason power rankings and everything like that sat. The teams after Auburn as well, of Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Arkansas, which we will dive into, I guess, here in a little bit. But Auburn did jump a team in the Vanderbilt Commodores. So, again, I fully believe that that is SEC media days. I think that is a lot of people hearing Alex Golish. I think that is people seeing Byron Brown, hearing Byron Brown, hearing Champ Anthony talking about the DJ Durkin defense. I think all of those things worked its way, because we've talked a lot about it, and I talked about it with Jordan Rogers in our interview, and it's statements that I've made multiple times, to where I truly believe that if Vegas lines were not public, looking at overall win totals, which we plan for our 230 segment, that will probably be a tomorrow segment, but looking at SEC projected win totals, Auburn sits at 6.5 projected wins, with the favorite to go over. So call it 7 wins. I would be willing to say, if the Vegas lines were not public, based off of the excitement, the buzz created by Alex Golish, not only with the transfer portal, not only with SEC Media Days, but just continuing to do more and more research on this team, outside of Auburn, Alabama, obviously, I would be willing to say that that line would jump an entire game. I think that the win total would move to 7.5. And I think people are starting to buy in on that a little bit. Not enough to sit there and project the Jordan Rogers quotes of how bullish he is on the Auburn Tigers, saying he thinks they get 8 or 9 wins. I'm not going that far, and I don't think a lot of the media is going that far. Yet that being said, I think this final ballot right here goes to show you what Auburn did with Alex Golish and the three guys that he brought, and being able to hear and see these guys for the first time. I think he's got some people bought in.
I would agree with that. I think you look at what the projected order of finish is telling us, and let's just say that Auburn just would lose to every team above them and would beat every team below them, right? Can we do that for...
In terms of schedule, or just in terms of looking at the 16 teams as a whole?
A little bit of both.
Sure.
So that they would effectively say, okay, Auburn's going to beat Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. That's 3 wins. You go 3-0 and out of conference, that's 6-6. You look at the 2 teams above you that you play, Florida and Tennessee. If you go 1-1 in those games, I think you're a top 10 SEC program.
And that would hit the over.
That would hit the win total. And if you go 2-0, which a lot of people are believing because of the Tennessee quarterback situation, and you're getting Florida early at home, that's 8 wins. And you're probably a 7 or 8 in the SEC. I think Auburn fans would be very happy if you told them, in year 1 of Alex Golish, you are finishing in the top half of the SEC, regardless of how it looks.
If you got asked that question again, if you got asked, or if you got rather told, that you could shake my hand and Auburn would win 7 games right now, I think a couple of weeks ago, and I think we asked this question a month or so ago, really early on in the new tenure, of where I said I would take it, you said you'd rather stick it out and play the games.
This was about basketball.
Was it basketball?
Because we said, would you lock in an 8 seed?
Oh, it was basketball. Well, same thing goes.
Yeah, same idea. Let's look at it from the same lens.
If Auburn goes 7-5,
and you're like the 9th best team in the SEC,
if I stick out my hand, would you shake it without another question asked?
I think I would. I think that if you can beat the 7 loss streak, I don't want to name that or give it legitimacy, but it's the fact of just looking at numbers.
It's been 7 years since you've won 7 games.
If you're a winning record, you have a chance at a bowl game to go get 8. Yeah, let's do it.
I think I agree.
I think you, and I know that that's such a, like, Auburn should be competing for trips to Atlanta and beating Alabama and Georgia, and they should be, hopefully.
Yeah.
But this is year 1. What happens when Auburn, who has had, just call it like it is, not good history over the past 5 years, and still can, Golish is still recruiting well, there's still a little bit of juice left for the program. If they go out and have a winning season year 1, everyone is going to say Alex Golish might win SEC Coach of the Year.
At bare minimum, you would see the proof of concept. You would no longer have to sell hope. You would no longer have to say, you can be the ones to come around and change the program.
Because they're changing it already.
Instead, it's, we've already built that foundation level. This is the worst we're ever going to be. This is the least amount of success that we're going to have. And because of you, now you begin the ascent, right? Now you begin that slow tick, tick, tick up the roller coaster where everything is going well. And then you have the free fall of the joyous of what the future looks like. That being said, I think if you go and you ask that question 3 weeks ago to everybody, I think without a doubt, you say yes.
Yes.
I think now, and it's funny again, because there has not been a chin strap buckled into the helmet. There have not been true pads put on the players against teams wearing other colors. Just from the media, just from the confidence that Golish has, that Byron Brown has, as well as the Auburn program, I think the answer would still be yes. Because again, if you're telling me you could guarantee 7 in the regular season, I would take it. But I think there's more people that hesitate. And I think that is a very, very good sign.
I agree with especially people that are, because you look at the schedule, you look at where you get certain teams, you look at where you get certain quarterbacks. I really think that there's a path. And I'm not going to sit here and say, I think that's going to happen. I don't. I think Auburn could even, like, it's so nice to hear that 6-6 is underperforming expectations.
Which, again, is unfair to Golish, the fact that we're sitting there going, is 7 now underwhelming? Because the answer is no.
But it's refreshing knowing last year that the goal, the stated mission was to get to a bowl game. That's now seen as like a, I mean, I don't love it, but it happened. Like, that is such a, it's such a different lens of looking at things, and that fires me up.
Yeah.
Point blank.
Got a text in the On the Line text box. Sorry to cut you off,
good.
Partner. At 334-784
1685.
I always start confusing the two. 334-784-1685, which you can always be a part of. Always text in. The phone lines are open for the first hour and a half of today's program, up until 3:30 as well. If you have thoughts on this and you want to be a part of today's program, feel free to do so. But I did get a text in the On the Line text box that said, how nice is it to think that going to a bowl game would be underwhelming? Exactly what we are discussing now, because it's been so long since you have truly felt anything like that, and how going to a bowl game, getting 6-6 in the regular season, would go, okay, yeah.
Like, imagine the fact that there's a world in 4 months where, or 4 or 5 months, where, and like, just in the conversation of me and you, Christian, of we're looking at it and we're like, man, it's unfortunate that we're going to go to we have to go to Charlotte for the Duke's Mayo Bowl,
mm-hmm.
versus, like, that's a world where we are saying that, while I think
versus Auburn being one of the teams that finished 5-7 and declined a bowl,
literally, and it's like, now it declined going to Birmingham, and now in January, if you told me, hey, you guys are going to go to the Duke's Mayo Bowl, I'd be like, sick, I love Charlotte, I don't like mayonnaise, but I think that's good, that you know, Auburn's going in the right direction.
I don't doubt that whatsoever, that you don't like mayonnaise.
I
for conversations off air, but
we'll definitely, because I
12-year-old palate.
Okay, let's relax. Hey, sometimes it depends. It has to have like an auxiliary sauce with it, like a ketchup or some kind of thing there. But no, I think that's pretty good. Just saying, there's a world where we're underwhelmed by going to a average bowl game,
yeah,
when we declined to go to a below average bowl game because we were 5-7.
Obviously, this is very, like, oh wow, I can't believe you're the host of an ESPN talk show with statements like this, but every win you get is just so big in terms of once you get bowl eligible. Think about what we are discussing right now of that sixth win of going 6-6 versus 7-5. The possibility of 8-4, like the growth that every win has after getting to that sixth win. You think about, I don't think there is a bigger jump in a season with going 8-4 and 9-3. I think that is the biggest jump,
yes,
that you can make in college football, because 9-3 to 10-2 is obviously big right there, but 8 wins is a solid team of like, okay, we probably should have gotten a couple of these wins. If you get to 9, that is incredible. That being said, I think a very close second is getting from 6-6 to 7-5.
Yeah, because you guarantee a winning season no matter what you do in the bowl game. You could go out there
and
pull
you probably
a Florida
beat
State,
a team
Georgia.
That you probably shouldn't.
Exactly. Like, that is the definition. How nice would it be, though, Christian? I know we have to get to break, but I want you to marinate and think about this. Alex Golish could have more SEC wins in year one than Hugh Freeze had in 3 years on the Plains.
Mm.
Like, he could have more SEC wins at home specifically than Hugh Freeze had all 3 years. There's a path, and it's not a crazy path. You hold serve against Vanderbilt. You hold serve against Arkansas. You're already at 2. Hugh Freeze had 3, correct? And then you upset Florida. You don't even have to play Ole Miss and LSU, and you've already tied that number.
I don't know if that fires me up or if that just shows the bare minimum of happiness that I have desired to feel over the last handful of years. We got to get to break. Otherwise, we're going to have all of 4 seconds, which we probably will anyways before the music kicks us out of here. But we will continue this conversation probably into hour number 2 as well. Also a hardwood conversation that we're definitely going to want to have with Stephen Pearl and the guys. All of that coming up, but we'll take a break, come back, and wrap up hour number 1 right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number 1 here on the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, continuing again to dive into the SEC Media Day's preseason ballot, and went a little bit off tangent, and I just want to double down because, again, we went to break and continued this conversation. We need to just, like, shut up and not talk whatsoever when it's commercial break, because we always talk about more stuff and then we have to revisit it again, but it's just how it works.
We are excited.
How it works when the mics are off, and we're happy.
We continue the conversation. We plan what we say in the next segment effectively.
Basically, yes. But again, talking about how, at least personally, and I don't consider this a hot take, but I think getting from 8 wins in a regular season to 9 wins in a regular season is the biggest jump that you can have in college football, going 8-4 to 9-3. I think that is the biggest jump. That is the widest. You hear all about, like, the beating somebody 85-60 is the largest 25 points, like, lead that you're ever going to see, rather than like 62-37. Feels so, like, doesn't feel as you're not picking it.
No, I don't understand what you're saying, but I don't agree with
you. Do you not look at numbers and, like, there are certain ones that feel,
well,
so
yeah,
different.
I think that a 13 or a, like, I'm trying to think of the way to put this. Like, I understand what you're saying, but, like, because I think for some reason my math is in sevens at this point.
Like, 31-14 is a 17 point.
Yeah.
But, like,
that's not a close game.
But, like, 24-7 feels a little bit different, although it's the same deficit.
Or 27-10.
Sure. Exactly.
Yeah, no, yes, exactly.
I think going from 8-4 to 9-3 is that similar feel of, like, holy cow, this is a humongous jump. It's only one more win. I think a close second is going from 6-6 to 7-5, talking about that's a big jump to have to get. And although that's only one win difference, the fact that Alex Golish is sitting at that spot right now in year one, I think gives a lot of momentum working its way into the future.
Yeah, 9-3, you win a bowl game, you get 10 wins. 7-5, even if you lose your bowl game, you're still over 500. So a win is a win.
Hour number 1 in the books. We flip over to basketball. The full schedule. We know who's playing who and when. We'll talk about that in hour number 2.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
The SEC basketball schedules have been released. Who goes where and when? We'll talk about it in hour number two.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Monday edition of On the Line. And forget anything else. We just got word that Ronald Acuna Jr. is now active tonight.
We are back
in New York, taking on the Mets. I don't know how I missed that. I just saw that on the bottom of NFL Live that is on the computer or on the TV. That shows where we're at in the middle of nothingness going on. I did see somewhere that it's the last weekend without college football because of like the NFL preseason and stuff, I guess,
sure.
That gets going.
Hall of Fame game coming up soon.
We'll take that. There was also the NFL flag football stuff that was going on this past weekend.
I did not see.
I was
busy watching the WNBA All-Star Weekend.
I was watching that, and they had it on
at a restaurant. I was watching it.
I was watching Jackson Quiven dominate the 3M Open, which we will discuss a lot here in hour number two, especially with our good buddy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, who has made almost as much money as Mr. Quiven did playing four really, really good days of golf. But appreciate everybody for being here with us. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin, having a really fun time in the studio here this afternoon. In hour number one, we talked a lot about the SEC Media Day ballots. We talked about the projected winner of the SEC Championship and who was going to be played. And the most popular one, overwhelmingly, was Georgia beating Texas in Atlanta. But we also gave you the numbers that only 10 times of the 34 since 1992 has the SEC media been right about the predicted SEC championship winner. And so that doesn't sound right to me. It just feels like there's no way that number is right. Maybe it's because we weren't there to give all of our professional opinions. So now they can start keeping track of, like, since Tripp and Christian have been to SEC media days, well, I guess that still won't be the case because you picked Georgia and I picked Texas. So we'll deal with that.
We'll figure
the projected SEC championship game has been accurate ever since Christian and Tripp joined the airwaves together on ESPN 106.7. We talked all about that. We talked all about where Auburn sat in the predicted overall votes. They were projected now to finish 12th in the SEC instead of 13th, which was what it was a couple of weeks ago. Auburn jumped Vanderbilt. And we talked how, again, I feel like the media days did a lot of that with Alex Golish, with Byron Brown. A lot of their words, seeing those guys for the first time, a lot of these media members. I think there's a continuous momentum working its way in the right direction for the Auburn Tigers. Again, with Auburn projected to finish 12th in the SEC this season. And then we kind of went off tangent and talked about what it could look like for Auburn as they sit right now at 6.5 projected wins. A lot of that conversation we will push to tomorrow alongside the win probability, for Auburn football, because ESPN now has those for each game, which is pretty cool to think about. And so we'll discuss that as well as Auburn's win total and then the other teams in the SEC and how we may be buying more teams, we may be selling more teams post-SEC media days. But all of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out over at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Which I highly recommend that before we get into hour number two stuff, because if you missed any of SEC media days coverage last week, go check that out. It was phenomenal. Always got to promote that because I think that's some of our best work, and we're only building up from there. But in hour number two, we're going to talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, and he's going to talk to us about kind of what's going on in this fall athletic season, kind of what his takeaways from SEC media days, as well as the hottest name in professional golf, Mr. Jackson Quiven, the 3M Open champion. We'll also talk about what's going on with the schedule with Stephen Pearl and the Auburn Tigers men's basketball schedule, and how we think there's some opportunity for Auburn if they can kind of manage these certain parts of the schedule. The Tigers could be returning to the NCAA tournament and not be anywhere close to the bubble. We'll talk a little bit about that, but the phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes of the hour. 334-321-1390. Give us a call. Give us your reaction on the schedule or anything. And then the text box is open 24/7 if you really wanted it to be. 334.
You might not hear from me, but it is open all the time.
334-784-1685 if you have any quick hitters that you want to get off, any jokes, any questions for our man Jacob Hillman. You're also more than welcome to ask those. We always highly encourage that because that sometimes gives us questions that we hadn't even thought of to ask, and it'll always give a good perspective from Jacob and give you guys what you guys want to be hearing from the experts. So go ahead, text in on that one, 334-784-1685.
Here is Auburn's 2026-2027 SEC schedule, and spam call in the middle of me trying to pull it up. Hold on.
Wow.
There we go. We're back. I'm going to read through this rather quickly, and obviously we'll break it down once we get to that point. But looking at it right now, with looking at Auburn's Instagram post that they made, January 2nd is at Texas A&M, the midweek Tennessee, which we'll get to here momentarily. January 9th, the weekend game, hosting Georgia. You then go to Austin to take on Texas. You then you're back home in Neville Arena to take on Ole Miss before you head up to Auburn North to take on Vanderbilt on January 19th or January 20th. You stay on the road to take on the Bayou Bengals down in Baton Rouge before you make your way back home to take on Mississippi State. Then back on the road January 30th to take on Alabama in Tuscaloosa. You then have back-to-back home games February 6th against Oklahoma, February 9th or 10th against the Florida Gators. You then have back-to-back road games. You go to Columbia to take on South Carolina on February 13th. You then go to Hogland in Arkansas February 16th and 17th. You thought about my joke that I indirectly and didn't
partially
mean to make with.
I've never heard of Fayetteville called Hogland personally, but I kind of like it. It's like Dollywood.
Exactly.
Sure.
You're just calling the hogs and
woo.
Other jokes you could make that I'm not going to.
We don't do that here.
No, we don't. Not professional. Not,
not
intentionally. I guess I should say there were a couple of indirect ones that I realized that were said in the middle of the week last week, but we continue on. You're then back home for back-to-back games, taking on the Tigers and the Tigers, Missouri on February 20th, LSU on February 23rd or 24th. Back on the road for two straight games, Kentucky and Ole Miss, before you close out the regular season at home. Gosh, another spam call. Somebody does not want me talking about Auburn basketball here this afternoon.
The USF fans got a hold of our social media tweet in there. They have now doxed Christian.
I wouldn't be surprised. Before you close out the regular season at home on March 6th, taking on the Alabama Crimson Tide. Now, we get to do the fun part because I know that there's no way if you are driving or you're not paying attention, you don't have the schedule put out in front of you, you don't remember any of those dates. And so we will do our professional duties now of breaking this down of how difficult Auburn's schedule is, when they play who, when they play where. But it starts with, I don't know how to feel, because usually it's like, oh, this fires me up because this schedule is so difficult, or it fires me up because this schedule is so easy, or it fires me up because there are one or two things that I notice that's going to be the overall motive of this schedule. And there are a couple of those, but when I look at it, it's kind of like, okay. There's not necessarily the easiest part of a schedule. There's not necessarily the most difficult part of a schedule, and we will still discuss this because we do have ones or a week or two that we feel like are very, very important, but you don't feel like you have that gauntlet like Auburn football does in the month of October, right, where it's like, holy cow, you're going to see a number next to all four of these teams' names. If you get one of these wins, you feel as if you're in a really good spot. You don't really feel that way when you look at Auburn basketball. It's kind of just, okay, it's pretty balanced. Obviously, you would like certain games elsewhere or certain days. Obviously, Florida and Tennessee being midweek games, those are crimes. And I think that is something you can get into with some of the quote-unquote complaints. But when you look at this as a whole, an 18-game schedule, I don't mind it.
I'm very curious your opinion on this, Christian. With looking at like the midweek games, yes, you play Tennessee and Florida as midweek games, You also travel to Fayetteville for a midweek game. You also travel to Vanderbilt for a midweek game. Do you look at midweeks at home as kind of like a as an injustice rather than a midweek on the road? Because I'd rather play at home on Saturday for sure, comparatively to an SEC away game on Saturday. But when you for their midweek, would you rather play those midweek games on the road or at home?
I'd much rather play – if you were giving me the option, I'd play the midweeks on the road and the weekend games at home. And looking at that, of the 9 home games that Auburn plays, 5 of them are weekend games, which is a very – it's a bonus to Neville Arena.
Those being Georgia, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Alabama.
Correct.
And then you go on the road – and then you have LSU, Florida, Mississippi State, and Tennessee at home during the midweek.
Yes. So five of the 9 games that Auburn plays at home are weekend games.
Well, I'm very curious, I feel like the road team would be at such a disadvantage for those games because it's not like you can travel up the night before and you play a noon tip on a Saturday. You have to fly up that day, fly it back that night. I feel like that would give an advantage to a home team to a point. But I don't think that's what we've seen in college basketball.
I mean, I think it still can be. I mean, I think when you look at Auburn, I think it's a little bit different. But
I think the fan base is hopefully going to show up no matter what. The jungle,
yes.
No matter, I mean, Saturday nights are special in Neville Arena. I don't think that that's a crazy take. But I think the midweek games are not that much of a fall off either. So I feel like
it's not at Auburn, but it is at other places.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's a benefit to go play the midweeks on the road. Midweeks on the road, especially, you hate it when you're at home from this standpoint. Like the 5 o'clock tip that Auburn had in Neville Arena. Was it last year? I believe there was a 5 o'clock tip. And then there were a couple of 9 p.m.
Yeah.
tips. And it's like, okay, those are – and Auburn not being great last year didn't help that 9 o'clock tip. But you go and you look at certain games like that, and it's like, okay – it's a little bit of a difference. You don't want that 8 p.m. tip on a Wednesday. But it's like, I mean, you think of the midweek games on the road as kind of the earlier tips in college football, right? You think about that, especially the 6 p.m., the early tip. I think that benefits the road team a little bit more because people have lives, people have jobs. It's a little bit more difficult to plan out 4 hours of your life on a Tuesday or a Wednesday afternoon, much less a night game. I think that benefits the road team rather than, again, a weekend game at home, regardless of the time. I think the later obviously plays a bit of a factor, but again, those 1 p.m., 3 p.m. games that Auburn has inside Neville Arena, I think that will prove to be a very big game. I don't believe we have the time slots yet. We'll get that closer to date. Because there's still, again, a couple of the midweek games that are the 5th or the 6th, January 19th or the 20th. But looking at it, I think it's a benefit for the Tigers that over half, again, I guess it's one way or the other. Some teams will have 4 weekend home games. Some teams will have 5. But the fact that Auburn, 5 of their 9 home games are weekend games, I think that is a very big benefit. I also think that it's a benefit. You look at it, one midweek, or I guess I should say one bye, rather, in that midweek. And that's after Alabama, before you come back home to play back-to-back home games against Oklahoma and Florida. So the schedule then works out to where you play 9 games, you have a bye week, and then you play 9 games. Rather than playing 6 games bye week and then having to play 12, I think that is also very beneficial for the Auburn Tigers. Not only because you play half your season, you then get a bye, and you play the other half of your SEC schedule, but also because of what the top half looks like versus the bottom half, especially, again, with back-to-back home games that you would love to say need to be wins. I'm not going to say that Florida, again, there's still enough question marks with this Auburn basketball team to where I don't think you sit there and look at Florida going, yep, that's a game that you have to have, otherwise the season's not going to work the way that it needs to. But I think you could say that about Oklahoma, and you get that right after you don't play a midweek. So you essentially get 6 days of rest before you have back-to-back home games. I think that is another big-time benefit for the Tigers.
I would agree. And I think that looking at this back half of this schedule, and honestly, the schedule past, you know, January, middle of January, right, where you have you get a lot of games where you have tough games and then kind of lick your wound if you lose, or momentum building games.
Sure.
Right? So you look at you play like Vanderbilt. You got to go on the road to LSU the next weekend. You play Mississippi State at home in a midweek. You got to go to Tuscaloosa. You get a bye. You get Oklahoma. And then you have your biggest home challenge of the year in Florida. Regardless of that game, again, you said it's a too much to be able to say, like, this should be a confident win or a confident loss. There's so many question marks. And Florida is a fantastic team. Let's say you lose that game. You got South Carolina on the road. I don't think Lamont Paris is going. He might not be the head coach at that point of that team. Then you go to Fayetteville. You say what happens there. You come back to Missouri. You have LSU at home. That's kind of a toss-up game. Again, that LSU team is such an unknown. I can't really say that they're going to be a contender or pretender. I just don't know. You can use that as well as a tune-up game to get ready to go to Kentucky and Lexington. Then you go to Ole Miss. I know you lost there last year, or I think you won there last year, but you lost at home.
Correct.
If you use that as a little bit of a tune-up game before the Iron Bowl of basketball to end the regular season at home this year, there's a world where it kind of will feel like a roller coaster of tough game, easy game, tough game, easy game, tough game, easy game. But if you're able to steal one of those games you're supposed to and prove that you're a good team, you steal a game at Fayetteville, you steal a game in Lexington, you steal a game at home against Florida, then you start seeing that momentum roll down that hill. And suddenly, Auburn could be looking up and realize, oh, wow, we are actually competing in the SEC. After a down year, the Tigers could be back.
We'll take a break. We'll come back because I want to have a little bit more time to discuss. We're going to split this up into not quite quadrants, but we'll call it thirds because that's what it basically will be. We're not going the devil's number. We're not going middle first six, middle six, and last six, but we'll go first five, middle seven, and then the last six and talk about what that looks like for the Tigers, what needs to happen during those individual thirds. If there is an easiest stretch, if there is a toughest stretch, we'll dive into that before we get to our good buddy Jacob Hillman at the bottom of the hour at 3:30. But we'll continue this when we come back, the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
All right, we're back here on the Monday edition of On the Line. I appreciate everybody for being here with us. Breaking down Auburn basketball as their schedule throughout the SEC has been released. Not quite the overall time slots, but we know where Auburn has to go. We know who comes to Neville Arena, and we know pretty much the days, except for, again, some of the midweeks that sit there either Tuesday evening or Wednesday evening. But you pretty much have concreted in who is going to play where and when they're going to play. And wanted to break this down into basically thirds for just the topic of conversation, just to see what this could look like once you get 18 games in. And we're going to go the first five, the middle seven, and the middle six. We're not going the first six, middle six, and last six, even though that would be the even split. I just don't want to do that. So the first five is Texas A&M on the road. You're then back home for Tennessee and Georgia on the road at Texas before you're back home taking on Ole Miss. You have three home games. You have two road games during this stretch. And I think that the first two, Texas in there as well, but Texas A&M and Tennessee, I think that's a difficult way to get your season started. A lot of, I guess in the midweek you hope to find out some of these questions, but a lot of your questions are going to be answered in terms of who Stephen Pearl can trust to step up in big game moments in these first two games.
Yeah, I think you look at that first five and to me, I think at bare minimum, you have to go 2-3. And I think that that third game is a 50-50 toss-up with Tennessee. I think that you'd like, I mean, and you'd and be, you know, gravy if you can beat Texas A&M and Texas on the road. That's two tougher environments, I think, especially with the investment that Texas has made in that basketball program.
Do you consider the must-wins Georgia and Ole Miss?
Yes, I do, because those are teams that, I know Georgia was better than you last year, but you were also on the road, and that was a fluky game as is, where you get to overtime on a missed free throw put back, and then you're one of your best players. The best player in that game fouls out. I think
you're a fan of My Real Change, by the way.
Yes, which means
extra
that they
foul
extra
overtime.
Foul. That would have been interesting. But it's a you look at it. I think that if you can hold serve on those, and you if you can hold your home games rather, that is exactly where that gets you from like an eight or from an eight seed to bubble to maybe even higher to start out this season. Just looking at what they can be.
Middle seven is Vanderbilt, LSU, both on the road, home for Mississippi State, on the road in Tuscaloosa, bye week. You then are back home for Oklahoma on the weekend, Florida in the midweek, and South Carolina. You have three home games and four road games in that stretch. But I don't think that is an unmanageable stretch when you look at the seven games in comparison to the schedule as a whole.
I know it's cliche to say that we're going to learn the most about Auburn over the vast majority of the SEC slate out of the quadrants or the sections that we're doing. But you look, Vanderbilt, it's a place where you've struggled historically on the road, but a winnable game. LSU, we don't know. I can't put any sort of stock into LSU one way or the other.
We know about Will Wade.
We know about Will Wade.
And that's about it.
Half his team might have to go to court to prove that they can play eligibility that day. We don't know. You know, Mississippi State, another. You should beat them. You lost them on the road last year, kind of looked like Georgia. And then you have Alabama on the road, Oklahoma at home, another one you probably could win, should win. Same thing with South Carolina, you have Florida. If I were to tell you that the Auburn Tigers were to go, let's call it 4-3 in this stretch, you lose to Alabama, you lose to Florida, and you lose one you might not want to lose to, why does that kind of seem like an understatement?
Understatement or underwhelming?
Underwhelming, that you say, yeah. You lose to Florida at home in a close game, you lose on the road in Tuscaloosa, and then you lose a game you're not supposed to, but you beat Will Wade. Or one of the wins could be Will Wade, one of the wins could be Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and Oklahoma. Like, you lose one of those two between Vanderbilt and LSU, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of underwhelming.
Yeah.
Especially what we just said in the first half. I think that there's also a world where Auburn goes 6-1 in that stretch. There's a world where they go 2-5.
Mm-hmm.
If you beat Mississippi State or Oklahoma and South Carolina, but you lose to LSU, you lose to Vanderbilt. There's so much variance there.
The last six, on the road in Fayetteville, back home for Missouri and LSU, back on the road for Kentucky and Ole Miss, before you close out the regular season at home taking on Alabama.
That's another one where you're going to learn a ton, but I think it's more of the...
At that point, I feel like you're done learning. You are who you are.
Okay, yeah, but I think it's like looking at the away games are tough. But I don't think – I think looking at the away games, 2-1 is doable. I think you look at the home games. I think 2-1 is also – 2-1 is the expectation for
yes.
those home games. If you can flip a win in Fayetteville and maybe even a win against Alabama, if you come out of that, what, six-game stretch, 5-1, I think that you are a contender in the SEC.
Do you have a most difficult stretch on this? Because I think I have a quote-unquote, and I don't use the word easiest lightly, but the part of the schedule where you feel like you have to take advantage.
I think that the part you have to take advantage, I think there's so two different questions. It's, I think you need to take advantage of the two-week stretch of Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, LSU, Mississippi State. You got to go at least 3-1 in those. Your toughest slate, the 2 weeks between Arkansas, Missouri, LSU, and Kentucky, because you have two opportunities to slip up and two opportunities to catch a team lacking.
I think those six games of home for Oklahoma, home for Florida, on the road at South Carolina and Arkansas before you're back home for Missouri and LSU, I think those six games will define your season. If you get the wins you're supposed to and possibly take one on the road, or are you going to slip up at home and let the season crumble down the stretch? Those six games are going to tell you everything you need to know. Music kicking us out of here. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. And Mondays at 3:30, concreted in. I guess I shouldn't say that because we didn't have him last Monday at 3:30. But every usual Monday afternoon at 3:30, we got to talk with this man on the phone lines, Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here joining us, my man. Hopefully the weekend has been well. Hopefully counting down the days until football season continues to build up some excitement.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And yeah, to your point, I mean, y'all are doing some big things down in Tampa. So really excited to hear from really all the SEC and getting ready for that upcoming football season and what's sure to be an exciting time around the league and especially here on the Plains with Alex Golish.
Yeah, so many questions that you hope are going to be answered. I think there were a lot of questions that got answered just by the confidence, by the way that Alex Golish gave his answers and Byron Brown gave his answers, Champ Anthony, Alex McPherson as well. What are your thoughts just before we dive into to everything kind of going on the Auburn side of things with we use the word refreshing, and I'm sure it's been overused now because of how many times we've said it, but it just seems so refreshing for Auburn and SEC Media Days this year of the media. I guess a congratulations or a shout-out to them as well for making it to where it seemed very professional, but it seemed so refreshing being able to hear Alex Golish spend all of his time talking about what he wants to see from his team, what he's already seen from his team, and then just the overall expectations and the identity of building standards in year one. What were some of your biggest takeaways from Auburn Day on Tuesday morning last week in Tampa?
I thought it was really interesting because leading into this, when we talked about what we wanted to hear from Coach Golish and the rest of the trio that went along with them was what I said at least was culture. And it was kind of funny because I thought one of the first things that Coach Golish said when he was up at the podium was about how he thought culture was an overused word and it's more about the identity. And there's obviously a distinction there. The culture is important for how this team interacts with each other in the locker room and day to day at practice and whenever they're just out doing whatever with their own lives. But then there's the identity of the football team. And he emphasized the physicality, violence, and preparation as the things that have made Auburn football great for so many years. And obviously it hasn't been the case the last half decade or so, but he references going back to the days, obviously, of Pat Dye in the 80s and then this century, 2004, 2010, 2013, 2017. Those are just some of the seasons that have featured a lot of success for the Auburn football program. And those seasons were seasons where Auburn in every game was the most physical, the most violent, and the most prepared team on the field. And I can't argue with the aspect of that being three of the most important aspects to identify yourself as a football team, especially in the SEC and in a program like Auburn that historically is one of the best in the nation.
Jacob, listening to what some of the other coaches said, more so like looking at Auburn's opponents, we were able to look and hear a lot from guys like Kalen DeBoer, Ryan Silverfield, Lane Kiffin. Was there any other programs or any other coaches that made some noise that would kind of just that you thought was interesting coming out of SEC Media Days?
You know, it was interesting. I didn't think Lane Kiffin quite made the noise that I thought he would. I thought he was more subdued, and part of that he talked about getting away from social media and he's got a bet with his son on how long he can go without it and anything like that. So I think that was certainly something to take away from what happened last week and the fact that again he didn't make any crazy headlines or anything like that, unlike John Sumrall, the new Florida coach, with a lot of the things that he said. I thought Pete Golden at Ole Miss, that was someone that he seemed to be praised quite a bit. And I would imagine that has to do with how he handled the situation last year, mm-hmm. With the coaching change going into the playoff. So those were kind of the three that I had my eye on outside of the Auburn sphere and thought that kind of surprised me how each of them interacted with the media and how I guess the perspective on them maybe kind of developed over the week as they spoke more and more.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Want to flip over to the golf course, because I think there's some news that we want to be able to discuss here this afternoon. And who would have thought that it's not, we're not talking about Scottie Scheffler. And although apparently the crowd continued to let this kid know that Scottie's coming, man. Scottie's having a great round. And by gosh, did he, shooting 8 under. He finished 22 under par, did Mr. Scottie Scheffler. But I think there's this kid that came out of the Southeastern Conference making his third ever professional tournament that happened to light up the scoreboard, light up the headlines as well. Give us your thoughts of Mr. Jackson Koivun and everything that he did this weekend.
It was pretty unreal. Just starting with that back nine on Saturday, going home with a 28, which set a tournament back nine record. That was incredible with the two eagles on 12 and 18. Those are two of the best shots I think anyone hit all week. Yeah. The three wood from 309 on 12, and then the five iron from 235 on 18. That really told me that he was there to win the tournament. Obviously, when he made that eagle on 12, he never surrendered the lead again, and he set the tournament scoring record. He did so many things this weekend that are noteworthy, and those will all continue to pile up as he continues to play. And he's already on the grounds at Detroit Golf Club getting ready for this week's tournament and going to try and go back-to-back. He's going to try and continue to play his way in up the FedEx Cup standings and try and have a huge playoff push. But I was so impressed yesterday. There were four junctures of the tournament that I thought were massive for him. First of all, starting off on number one with the birdie, hitting that wedge to 17 inches and making the birdie was massive. He obviously slept on a three-shot lead and probably saw some of the noise and heard some of the noise that Scottie Scheffler and others were making early in their rounds yesterday. For him to come out and make that birdie was massive to the confidence. Also, the par on nine that he made was so massive, a long putt that he had to make after a not-so-good bunker shot, and the same thing on 12 with a birdie instead. Just didn't quite hit the bunker shots well, but his putting, as we've discussed in the past, is so, so good. It's one of the best. He has one of the best putting games on the planet. It showed in those moments because it was also at that point where Scottie Scheffler, he's 6 under through 12, or he's right there. He could make it a two-shot deficit, and Jackson was able to hold on and keep that momentum rolling and en route to what ends up being a dominating victory. And I thought the tee shots on 16 and 17 to stick with his game plan and stay aggressive, because on 16, it's a drivable par four, and he easily could just lay back with the iron, hit a wedge up and two putt for par. And on 17, he took an aggressive line and he didn't think he hit it well. He's yelling go. It's 40 feet past the hole anyway. I thought him being able to stick to that game plan, he looked like the all-around golfer that we know he is. For him to do that on the PGA Tour with the world number one tracking him down and shooting a 63 on Sunday was about all you could have asked for out of his first career win, and doing it in his third career professional start just makes it all that more impressive.
We're talking with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, and with Jackson Koivun doing so well and winning this weekend, Auburn was such a forefront of what was able to be the conversations. It was on his bag. You have Jim Nantz saying War Eagle after the winning putt. Talk to me about the kind of representative that Jackson Koivun can be for Auburn athletics as a whole in the PGA.
Yeah, it certainly helps that he was winning the national championship under Nick Kleinert and with the rest of his team a month and a half ago. So it's fresh on everyone's mind, and everyone knew to expect him to perform when he came on tour as a professional. I don't think anyone necessarily expected him to set a tournament scoring record and win by three shots over Scottie Scheffler, but there was this expectation for him to come out and perform, and for him to deliver in this way, it's just so, so impressive. And again, it speaks volumes to what this coaching staff has built over the last several years. Of course, Coach Kleinert had been been at Auburn for so long now, and he is one of the, if not the best, I would say he's the best coach in the country. This program now is right up there as the best in the country as well. And I think the only thing that you've been kind of waiting on is the consistent professional performances. And mm-hmm. I think Jackson Coivin's going to get that rolling here very soon. And there's plenty of other guys that are still playing on tour, like Trace Crow. He was in the field this week as well. And there's obviously guys that are going to be on the come up and are going to have their chances as well. And yeah, to your point, it just really puts the nation on notice. And you know how well this program has recruited over the last few years, getting guys like Jackson Coivin. Billy Davis was the number one overall recruit a few years ago and will make a huge impact next year. And then Logan Riley and Jake Albert, two stud freshmen from this past season. It's going to keep going. And it, like I said, the nation's on notice when it comes to Auburn men's golf.
Jacob, I know that this may not be the question for you to answer, but being the golfer, being the guy that spends time on the course, we know that the mentality is arguably the toughest part of a golfer, because it's not a team aspect. This is me. This is maybe my caddy. This is my driver. This is my three wood. This is my eight iron, whatever the case may be. Or for a lot of guys, it's me and the putter as well. Jackson was asked after his win what he has been most proud of and what sets him apart. And he talks about his mindset. He talks about, hey, there's times when I go out onto the range and I'm looking around at all the professionals, and I know that I'm not the best ball striker. I know that I can't drive it the furthest. I know that I can't putt it the best, or whatever the case may be. I don't think there's too many people that would say that they putt it better than Mr. Jackson Coivin. But, man, how much of an asset is that for Jackson to have at such a young age, knowing the confidence, knowing the mentality, especially that killer mentality of people talk all about it, of the goals that he sets for himself. And even at a young age, said, I want to be world number one. Everybody kind of laughs that off when you're an amateur or you're not having success. That being said, you've now seen a taste of that success. What is it like having the mentality of Jackson Coivin, and how much that can be a benefit of him in the future in the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I really wish I knew what it was like, because hey, I might be trying to play some golf as well on the PGA Tour, but because I think that, to his point, is what makes him as good of a golfer as he is. Obviously, he is exceptionally talented. I think he's underselling himself a little bit there, but yeah, he might not be the most powerful hitter. He might not be the best ball striker. I think he is one of the best putters in the world. I don't think there's anything to say there, but the rest of it, when he puts it together, and it, I think it starts with kind of what he said in the post round interview on CBS about what he writes on his glove: confidence, trust, and dominate. It's just, hey, like you said, it might not be the longest hitter. I might not hit the ball the best way possible. In his last 2 years at Auburn, he developed his wedge game and his approach game so much from where he was as a freshman. And that's what was so impressive. And part of the reason he wanted to come back to Auburn and continue playing mm-hmm. in college, other than some of the personal things that he talked about and everything like that. But he knew that there was still some development to be had with his game. And obviously in college, there's a little bit less pressure to do that. And he was able to do that. And I mean, this week he was first in the field in proximity in approach and strokes gained approach. All of that really is what led to him winning in dominant fashion. And like you said, it's something that I played competitive golf growing up. I still will sometimes play competitive golf, but there is such a difference. Like the mindset is the difference. And I've been listening to a lot of people kind of talk about this, because, hey, look, these college golfers, they're so much more developed now coming out of college and going on the PGA Tour. I just think Jackson's probably a step ahead of even the best guys that have come out. Because I mean, some of the older guys, like I say older, but they've been out of college for a little bit. Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland. And then you look at some of the guys like Ludwig Obert, who has had so much hype around him, and they've had a lot of success. And then there's some that haven't had as much success, whether they've gone to a different league or they've had their issues over the past 2 years. I think Jackson has the capability to stick with it and be consistent as well.
Jackson Koivun wins the 3M Open, 25 under par, shot 5 under on round 4, the final round, but again, almost just stiff-arming the rest of the competition, knowing the number that he had to get because he was out and still had 4 or 5 more holes once Scotty was already in the leaderboard, and you feel like managing that pressure was almost more impressive than anything else he did throughout the weekend, and walked away with Mr. Hillman's annual salary, just about of 1.5, it seemed like, for Mr. Koivun, so a well-earned weekend for him. And final question before we let you get out of here. Auburn's 2026-2027 SEC basketball schedule has been released. We've been able to break this down just about game by game, if not kind of third by third, and the overall expectations. Is there any game, any slates that catches your eye? And then is there any place that you're really excited to be able to travel to again here this year?
Yeah, I'll start with the opening four games, I think, are critical for this team this upcoming year. Going to Texas A&M, a team that obviously just made it back to the NCAA tournament and second year under Bucky McMillan, then hosting Tennessee and Georgia. Tennessee, we obviously know what Rick Barnes has done with that program. Georgia didn't come to Neville Arena last year for the first time in who knows how long because of the shift in the schedule and the permanent home and away opponent. And then you go to Texas on January 12th or 13th. That Texas team is going to be one of the best in the nation. It's probably going to be the team picked second in the SEC behind Florida. So that stretch to open the year. And then, I think I look back at the end of the back end of the schedule where you're hosting LSU, and then you go to Kentucky and Ole Miss before hosting Alabama to close it out. I feel like every year when Auburn goes to Kentucky, it's that second to last Saturday of the regular season. So I think that's always an intriguing matchup and something that it'll be the first time Auburn's gone back to Rupp Arena to face Kentucky since clinching that SEC title a few years ago in Rupp Arena for its first win in over 30 years. So that's a key matchup as well.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network taking some time to join us here on this Monday afternoon, counting down. It's not even the dog days of summer. It feels like the summer has flown by to where it is almost football season. We talk about it just about 40 days until Auburn gets things going in Atlanta, taking on the Baylor Bears, and we are so excited for another football season. My friend, plug everything that's going on. I know that Andy Burcham still got some stuff working with the Talking Tigers podcast, but won't be too long until you get to hear about him in the middle of the week, and a lot more coverage gets picked back up, holy cow, on the Auburn Sports Network. So plug everything and where everybody needs to go to keep up with all the content.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Now you're good, Christian. We're less than a month away from Tiger Talk. That's unbelievable. So we're so excited for that. We'll have more details about that in the coming weeks, but it's here. It's about time to get rolling. And of course, less than 40 days now from kickoff against Baylor in Atlanta. So we'll obviously have all the coverage on the Auburn Sports Network when we get to Atlanta. And then to your point, Talking Tigers podcast continues to roll on with Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. He speaks with Harold Melton this week on the podcast. And that's wherever you listen to your podcast or you can watch All Worry Go Plus. So so excited to bring that coverage again to you guys this week and everyone in the Auburn family. And we'll have all those details coming shortly.
Awesome, my man. Well, we greatly appreciate your time. Looking forward to talking with you again here next Monday afternoon.
All right, we'll talk to you then. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Again, taking some time to join us on this hot summer Monday afternoon. We will take a break. We'll come back and quickly wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, having a fun time, being back in Auburn, Alabama. And when you get the content like this, it makes it to where it makes the Monday shows relatively easy, just in terms of everything that happened over the weekend, everything that happened this morning again as well, with the SEC basketball schedule being released, not only for the Auburn Tigers, but for all the teams in the SEC. And so over the coming days and coming weeks, we'll be able to dive into a lot of the overall SEC calendar outlooks. And if there's any other teams in the SEC that just have an absolute gauntlet of a schedule, are there any SEC fan bases that are very upset with how everything looks right now? Because so far, with what I've seen from the Auburn perspective, everybody's kind of just okay with it. Like, there's not really the holy cow, they screwed us over. It's also not the okay, you play your first eight games, and after that, you feel as if there's a lot you can work with. It's just kind of there. You mentioned it, of a little bit of a roller coaster. You have the two really tough games, and then you have a little bit of a quote-unquote breather, which, again, we say breather just in terms of what could be with this team, with this Auburn team, of if you're wanting to get where you want to go, those need to be games that you are able to either get your feet back up under you, or you're able to take another step and build momentum to where it's all of a sudden you're on a three-game win streak or a four-game win streak, or you snap a two-game losing streak. So that way, again, it makes it to where when you look up after 18 games, you're in a pretty solid spot with the expanded tournament. You feel as if there's no reason, there's no exception but to find your way playing postseason basketball, not in the NIT.
It's going to be nice for Auburn this year. The big talking point won't be the teams on the schedule. It's the Auburn team on the floor deciding the wins and losses.
I think that's a really, really good point. So many question marks still with this team, but you feel as if there's a little bit more excitement with the question marks rather than the hope that could work with what we saw last year, which obviously did not work its way out. When we come back, tomorrow's show, we're going to dive into a lot of the ESPN projections for the Auburn Tigers, how many wins they're supposed to have versus comparatively with the entire SEC, win totals for the entire SEC. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Sports are better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.